Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and today our whole segment is editor tips and tricks. And this is just going to be, we're going to have so much fun because I have editors Elizabeth Beasy and Jennifer Keltner with me here for a few segments, and we're going to banter back and forth about the topics that you all write about the most and want to know the most information on. So, you know, Jennifer and Elizabeth, you know, what is one of the main things that people are writing you about that they need help with when they're quilting?
I think the most common comment that we hear from readers, Pat, is that they don't have confidence when it comes to choosing colors or combining prints and fabrics with confidence.
Mm-hmm.
So we hear often through emails and through letters and when we go out to speak to people at guilds that they just feel like if they could only do a better job of picking colors and fabrics to go together, that they would be happier with their finished projects.
And that's why since the beginning of the magazine, we have done color options that helps, that always helps people give them the freedom to see the same quilt in another way. So we will never quit doing those, that's for sure. People love those.
Absolutely.
Just like Laura does those a lot, doesn't she? She actually does the remakes for you.
Right. Laura Benke is our quilt tester, and she tests four blocks of every quilt in order to make sure that our instructions are accurate. But it always kind of amuses me when I hear from a reader that, you know, don't tell anybody, but I really like the color option better than I like the original quilt.
Right.
And we love hearing that because really, sometimes you'll see a quilt and you'll think, well, I'm not sure I really like that pattern because it's in a colorway that maybe isn't one that you're familiar in working with or it doesn't go with your home decor aesthetic or whatever. And seeing it in another color palette completely can really change the look and feel of the quilt altogether. So color really does have a big influence on how a quilt appeals to you or a pattern or design appeals to you. So that's why we think it's important to have that as a hallmark of all of our publications and what we do.
So, you know, do either of you find that when you're, you know, personally picking up some fabric that you have, like, something in mind for it, for the design that's going in the magazine? You know, how is that working out?
Well, when I buy fabric, I almost never have a design in mind, actually. I just gravitate toward what I love, and that's usually how I actually start choosing fabrics for a quilt. I really do start with a main print, and whether that main print even ends up in the actual quilt is debatable. Sometimes I love a stripe or I love a big giant floral, and I use that to pick most of the colors that are in that quilt. And that could sometimes be the border fabric. I know a lot of people, that's how they pick it. They'll have the big floral fabric for a border, and then they choose fabrics. But I do that, but I also do it, you know, like I said, a slightly different way, and I just have little bits of that main fabric maybe appearing in the quilt. So that's really how I get my most successful quilt combinations.
Right.
So like, Jennifer, in the magazine, do you guys give, like, little tips like that?
We do, and we try to approach it from a variety of different angles. I always tell people, you know, who say they don't have confidence in mixing colors, or who will come up and say, I have no idea what colors go together. We all get up in the morning. We all get dressed. You all pull something out of your closet, and most of us look okay. So you can pick colors and combinations that look good. And I think it's always easier to design that quilt with the fabric that you love, that's in your color palette, that's sort of in your wheelhouse, as it were. The harder thing, I think, sometimes comes when you're making a quilt for someone else or you're making it for a special occasion or you're going outside of what your typical color area is. And a story I always like to share is my daughters have very different color tastes than mine for their decor. And so sometimes rather than trying to appeal to exactly the color they're telling me that they want,
mm-hmm.
I find that
mm-hmm.
hard to work with because I get too many parameters. So
yeah.
what I have them do is take a picture on their phone. My oldest daughter was shopping at a store, and she saw a beautiful sweater display that she just mm-hmm. loved the whole look of it. So she snapped a picture of it on her phone and sent it to me, and she's like, I want a quilt that looks like this. And I was able to look
yeah.
at that photo and then pick out the colors and find fabrics that were similar in feel and mood to the display that she liked. And so sometimes I mm-hmm. think it's something like that where you're looking to please someone else's palette, or you're working in a combination of colors that you don't usually work in. And that can be a good starting point, is to start with a photo of something that the recipient likes.
One tip I like...
Go ahead, Elizabeth.
I was going to say, one tip I do like that I've heard from a designer is that when she's making a quilt for one mm-hmm. of her grandkids or one of her kids, she asks them to tell me what your room looks like, and she'll actually sometimes snap photos of their wallpaper or the toys mm-hmm. that are in their room, so that she, like you said, she can get the idea of what she wants to make for them, because, as you know, kids usually can't verbalize, well, this is what I want in a quilt, but she can
right.
figure it out from what they already love.
You know, I had an example on one of my internet groups where one of the ladies was working for her niece, doing a quilt in greens. And she went out and she actually made the whole quilt top, and she sent photos to all of us to look at, which, you know, that's also a great thing to take, you know, take it and send the photos to other people.
Right.
But it turns out that shade of green, the maker didn't like it, and she was really worried that the gift was going to be the wrong green. And we all loved the quilt, but they had in their mind a different green.
Right.
So we all thought that was really interesting because the quilt was great. There was nothing wrong with the quilt, but it wasn't the green, shade of green that everybody wanted.
Right. And I think sometimes that's hard to translate when you're working with quilting fabrics, because often mm-hmm. quilting fabrics are a season or two behind exactly the shades that you'll see in home decor or in garments.
Yeah.
And you get
mm-hmm.
an idea in your mind that you want something to match a scarf or a sofa
right.
or something like that, and that exact shade isn't available. So I know one of the things I think Elizabeth is always really great at doing, and when she was talking about her method of inspiration and finding that one focal print that sometimes doesn't end up in the quilt, is mm-hmm. she loves scrappy quilts. And I love to watch when Elizabeth is in the office and kind of working mm-hmm. her magic with a collection of fabrics, because it really is true. There are a lot of times where what she starts with isn't the focal point. It's just a little itty mm-hmm. bit. So maybe you can talk a little about that.
I mean, you got to start somewhere. So
right.
rather than just mixing a bunch of things together, I always think, yeah, it is good to have a starting point, even if I'm not going to end up there. One thing that I think helps me, when Jennifer was saying that, you know, sometimes those colors that you love aren't available, you know,
mm-hmm.
I make sure I broaden my palette. I don't limit myself to only batiks, only reproductions, only solids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything. The world is my the world is mm-hmm. my oyster and my paint box. So
mm-hmm.
I'm not cutting out basically any color. So that's one thing. I think if someone is really struggling with finding that perfect color and they can't find it in the genre that they like, I really think
mm-hmm.
they should just open their mind a little bit and try to put in, even if it's just solids. Solids could really
mm-hmm.
work with almost any type of quilt, I'm going to say. So, I mean,
right.
that's one thing I do. So I do a mishmash of stuff, but I do feel like it
mm-hmm.
pretty much somehow works in the end. And I also have kind of a goofy rule of I have a collection
mm-hmm.
of basics that I think they were a Michael Miller basic years ago, the mirror ball
mm-hmm.
dots. And every
oh,
quilt
yeah.
I make has at least one little piece of that in it. So I know a lot of people like that. They'll either put, it has to have a batik in it, it has to have a Joe Morton in it, it has to have just
mm-hmm.
that one particular thing, or a polka dot.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I think that would be you, Jennifer.
Right. I like the polka dot.
Yeah.
Jill Mead always has to have
yeah.
a stripe in every quilt that she makes.
She also puts a little bit of black and white, I think, in every quilt that she makes, because she
mm.
thinks that it just adds that extra little zing. So,
how about you, Pat? What do you have a starting point for most of your projects?
Well, a lot of times it's the design. You know, I sort of go from it, the design, and then I think, well, what color do I want it to be this time? You know,
Right.
Because I'm doing projects most often for publication personally. But when I, even when I did a project recently that was a gift, the recipients were, had a beach home, and that's, they just bought a beach home. And so I was doing colors that I thought would be beachy and then found things that went with that. So I had sort of a sherbet and a blues and then built off of that frame. So I had a starting palette and then expanded.
Right. I know it, we would be remiss in saying for people who are looking for inspiration, one of the other places you can always go is to allpeoplequilt.com and look at some of the slideshows there of projects. There are quite a few things that are sorted by color or by theme for people who just really want to jumpstart their next project idea and look at combinations of fabrics and things that have been put together by designers and other quilters. And sometimes that's a great place to start, too.
Well, the internet also has a bunch of, if you go out there and just look at like home decorating, even sites that do home decorating things.
Absolutely.
Where they show rooms, they'll show a color palette in a room, which is often way more controlled than probably anybody would live in, but they make great quilt palettes.
They do. I often, if I find a picture that I know I want to step into that room, then that's going to be a perfect quilt because I will definitely want to wrap up in that quilt. That's for sure. That reminds me, some of those most successful photos of rooms and things that you see, you know, one of the things that they have is not an equal amount of color in them. So there are, you know, if most of the room is gray and purple, they might have an accent of lime green. So it's those ratios that really, I think people don't think about when they're putting together their fabrics and say, well, I used gray and purple and lime green. Why doesn't this look good? Because maybe you used 30%, you know, of each of those. So just try a tiny bit or a ton of gray and a little purple and I think that it really is a good tip that people don't think about.
Right. Don't make it so balanced, so equal parts of everything. It, when I'm teaching, one of the things that we talk about in one of my classes is a lot about color and fabric selection and mixing up a lot of different prints and patterns. And I always find personally, and it does seem to ring true with a lot of the people in my classes, is that the smaller the quilt, the less colors are better, and the bigger the quilt, the more it can handle. So if we're working on a small piece and it doesn't look right, we take out one of the colors. So it tends to keep it more in sync and more pleasing to the eye to have less colors on a smaller piece.
That's a great tip. Maybe when we come back from the break, we can talk next about sort of defining what your style is and helping you figure out what kind of colors, maybe combinations are better for your personality quilting type.
Yeah, and then also maybe we could talk about where we each find our inspiration.
Sounds great.
You know, yeah, okay. So this is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, and we are going to take a little break and then come back with the editors, Jennifer Keltner and Elizabeth Beasy and myself, Pat Sloan, and we're going to talk some more about fabric. Be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
We're back at the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. You can just feel the excitement. Minnick and Simpson are back with Prairie Paisley 2, a collection with the rich, layered look of a well-loved fabric stash. Here comes Sandy Gervais getting sassy with this bright and cheerful line. Up next, Deb Strain's Tend the Earth is bringing the peaceful feeling of a garden to the runway. Ooh la la, it's Bunny Hill Designs and Baby's Going to Paris. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Did you know you can find your favorite books from C&T Publishing available as ebooks at ctpub.com? From new releases to classics, there are hundreds of titles to choose from. Ebooks are instant and immediate. No more waiting around for a printed book to be delivered. They take up less space and are easily portable. Plus, ebooks use very few natural resources. Look for the ebook sale button at ctpub.com to save 20% on your ebook purchase. Start browsing now at ctpub.com.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands. We're listening to you. Comment on today's show and tell us your ideas for future shows. Visit the contact page on our website, allpeoplequilt.com. Now, back to the show. Here's Pat.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. You're listening to a all-editor tips and tricks show today. So I have Elizabeth Beasy and Jennifer Keltner here, and I'm Pat Sloan. We're talking about fabric in the first segment, and we're going to talk some more about fabric because, you know, that's why a lot of us quilt, or at least that's why I quilt. And so, you guys, we talked about, you know, different parts of fabric, but, you know, we all have a style. And that style does change as we go along, you know, but people sometimes, it takes for a while to figure it out, doesn't it?
It does. And I think whether you're making the quilt for yourself or for, a specified recipient, I think one thing that you can do to figure out if you're trying to determine your style is by looking at a variety of patterns. And what mm-hmm. I do, I have two adult daughters and an adult son, and they have very different ideas of what they think a quilt should look like. One of mm-hmm. them doesn't want to see any delineation between the blocks. She likes when everything sort of melds together and it's very scrappy and sort of a mishmash of things. Mm-hmm. The other mm-hmm. wants a lot of sashing, wants to know exactly where the block begins and ends, and is very geometric. And I think you can mm-hmm. translate those trends in the kind of patterns that you like into the fabrics you choose as well. Elizabeth?
Yeah, I do think that's true. You know, if you like some of those quilts that kind of meld together and mishmash, mm-hmm. and I'm that way, I make sure that I include a lot of mediums. So if a pattern calls for light fabrics and dark fabrics, I usually mix a bunch of mediums in with those lights, and I mix a bunch of mediums in with the dark values, because then I have that flow from kind of one thing to the next. However, if I was going to make a quilt for my husband, he does not appreciate the scrappy look. What he calls it mm-hmm. is busy. So I would choose fabrics very differently, I think, for him. I would still have to do scrappy because I just can't make quilts that aren't scrappy, but I would make it a much smaller palette, let's say. So I would mm-hmm. have maybe 100 different greens, but I wouldn't add any other color to it. So he didn't think it was busy.
And I think sometimes, you know, you can think like when I hear mishmash, I think like English cottage, you know, Liberty of London fabrics, you know, big roses and all kinds of stuff. Whereas when you're going to get slim and trim with your quilt, you might have more contemporary fabric selections that are tighter. There's not as many colors in each piece of fabric. Gives you a way to sort of start collecting up to build that quilt.
Right. I think one of the other tips that I learned in working with Bill Kerr and Weeks Ringel is that sometimes when you're looking at those big prints, or whether they're contemporary or the floral kind of thing, sometimes what mm-hmm. fools the eye when you're combining those prints and fabrics is when you can't see the edge of the piece when you're cutting it off. And if it's important to you to know that that's a polka dot fabric, if you put mm-hmm. a solid sashing or something that breaks the space between that polka dot print and something else and gives mm-hmm. your eye a place, your eye will fill in the missing part of the circle or the missing part of the flower if it has a stopping point. Whereas if you put two really busy prints side by side, sometimes you don't really know what you're looking at, and it's harder on the eye. So I think, especially in some contemporary quilt designs, that sashing or tone on tone or solid in between pieces gives your eye a place to rest and lets the big, bold fabric kind of stand alone.
So what about inspiration? What inspires you guys? You know, what do you look for or look at to be, you know,
we look at everything.
Even to make a quote.
Magazines,
everything.
We love them.
Yeah. We all look at
American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine.
I think, you know, we ask this question a lot from our designers as well, and they've given us some great answers. Like I said, most of us look at everything around us, and we can't stop ourselves from envisioning it as a quilt. Some of the other answers that we've gotten, I love one from Karen Montgomery. She says the China department of Macy's is where she goes to just find some of the newest things to combine together. I just love that.
I think also architecture. A lot of times you can see shapes and designs in architecture. When you think about paisleys and things that are in fabric, a lot of that is in menswear inspired. And looking at fashion magazines, even though the color palette might not be exactly there, you can see some shapes and color combinations that you might not have thought of. Home decor, things that you mentioned. And, of course, the internet. I mean, we talked about allpeoplequilt.com. Pinterest is certainly a place that, you know, is a great way to collect your ideas, because you can not only go across the internet at a lot of sites and pin different things, but if you pin them to your board and it's sort of a collective of what appeals to you, you can go back then and look at it and say, hey, this color keeps showing up in the things I pinned, and I like it. There's another app for people who have an iPad called Mood Board. And what I like about Mood Board is you can pin photos to that, and then they have a little like an eyeglass or spyglass sort of thing that you can hover over a photo, and it'll sort of create that paint chip swatch for you based on colors in the photo and help you put together a palette.
I'm like addicted to Pinterest because I create boards by color, and they're not just, because I have a yellow board, it's not just yellow. There's always a pop of something in there.
Right. And often
gives you that idea.
Often it's that little pop that we forget to include when we're doing a quilt.
So how do you tell people what to pick for a pop? You know, what's your thought on it, Jennifer?
Well, Elizabeth's got her...
I just know that Jean Wells, what she encourages people to pick for a pop is to look on the complete opposite side of that color wheel. So if you're making a quilt that's all primarily reds and things, look across the color wheel and add a little bit of green. It just is very unexpected, and it just provides a lot of interest.
And sometimes I think it's even if you look at – I look at a lot of photos as inspiration. I'm really inspired by photo art. And often it's the light that comes into the photo. It's that little highlight on a bowl of cherries or – and it's really just a shade of white or cream or silver or gray or just a little sparkle that you see naturally in photos when you look at them or when you're in a beautifully lit room and the sun's coming through the window.
And sometimes you can sometimes you can get that kind of look. Sorry, Pat. With a lot of the prints that we use, I was just thinking I don't add a lot of white or gray or black to my quilts, but I use lots and lots of prints. So, you know, a lot of things have a white ground. So I guess I am adding those to my quilts.
When I'm helping people with fabric, one of the things that I find people do that is sort of distracting sometimes is when you're collecting on your fabric and auditioning, you've got big chunks of it, but if you're having to do a pop, you need to cover up most of it, so that if you've got four colors and they're all, you know, big chunks of fabric, your little pop, your red maybe or your black or whatever, just fold it underneath so only a little bit of it shows, because then that gives you the effect that you're looking for, rather than have a big hunk of black and saying, oh, I think I want that as my pop, but there's too much of it visually showing, and it's distracting.
One thing I do when I'm, like I said, choosing fabrics and kind of laying all those fabrics out for a quilt, I make sure I do the squint test. Luckily, I'm, you know, I'm can't see anything without my glasses. So I can just don't even have to squint. I just take my glasses off. And if I see something that pops out, whether it's too light, too bright, too dark, mm-hmm. I know some people will say, take that out. I just put more of it in so that mm-hmm. so that it just kind of balances itself out. Mm-hmm. So.
And I think there the key is, you know, it's okay to abandon ship if the palette isn't right. You start working on a project. I think that spending mm-hmm. time pulling fabrics and kind of creating that virtual quilt by looking at your stash or going to the quilt shop is a great thing. But if it doesn't work out, don't force it. Mm-hmm. It's okay to abandon ship altogether and just start a new quilt that maybe you dream up while you're looking at those other fabrics. But the other key, I think, is not to have things be too perfectly matched. And again, we hear this mm-hmm. from a lot of readers who are like, I can't find enough reds that match exactly, or I can't find enough blues that are in this one palette. You might want to go towards a collection of more blue greens, you know, and make sure they're mm-hmm. in a family, but they don't have to match exactly. And often what makes it interesting is that real variety in the blues or the reds or the palette that you've chosen.
And I think we see that in some of the quilts that we love that are in the magazine. And if you showed that same quilt to someone and really pointed out that mm-hmm. these reds don't all match, they understand that, oh, maybe they don't have to all be perfect.
Right.
So, Pat, I have one other exciting thing before we wrap up this segment Ooh. On fabric and color, and that is for fans of American Patchwork and Quilting and Quilts and More to know that in upcoming issues, beginning in the June issue of American Patchwork and Quilting, you'll find a new column and some new additions called Color Inspiration, where we're going to show our readers a beautiful image, a photo, just what we've been talking about here today. Mm-hmm. And then instead of giving them the paint swatch of colors kind of thing, we're going to give them swatches of actual fabrics they can find at their quilt shop and things that should be in stores now, and really translate those photos into a collection of prints that we think would make a beautiful quilt and sort of jumpstart their thinking on combinations they might not have thought of.
Excellent. That's a wonderful idea, because real fabric really says it all.
We think so.
Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and take a little break here at American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We'll be right back, and we've got some machine quilting talk next.
Do you have a recent project to share? Post a photo of your latest quilt project in our show and tell section at allpeoplequilt.com.
Whatever your style, whatever your skill, you'll find everything you need to start sewing today at PatternSpot.com, the downloadable pattern marketplace. It's a one-stop shop with hundreds of designers and thousands of patterns, all online under one virtual roof. Go to PatternSpot.com and sign up for our email list to get 20% off your next purchase. From quilts, home decor, and wearables to fabric crafts and accessories, PatternSpot.com is your one-stop pattern shop.
Welcome to the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. We've got a great lineup for you today. Entering with the Spin Twirl by Me and My Sister Designs brings a playful and fun vibe to the runway. Oh, Hello Luscious by Basic Gray. You looking good, girl. Up next, Reunion by Sweetwater offers a fresh take on navy by pairing it with gray and happy shades of green, yellow, and red. Look who's coming now. It's the Berenstain Bears, a childhood favorite. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, executive editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we're doing the Editor's Tips and Tricks whole show today with Elizabeth Beasy and Jennifer Keltner. And we just finished talking about the questions readers write in about color and picking color for their quilts. But, you know, Elizabeth, there's another big question. It's the machine quilting. You get that one a lot, don't you?
We do. That's probably the second most popular question that we get. Readers just don't know. First of all, they're intimidated by doing the quilting process if they never have. And I have to admit, I, like a lot of other people, have a lot of unfinished tops because the piecing is just easy to do. I know exactly what I'm doing. But I am a machine quilter as well, both long arm and on my home sewing machine. And in getting to the point where I'm comfortable doing that, I think there are things that I learned and that a lot of us have learned that really have made it easier. So that's what we want to do, is take out some of the fear of making a quilt, quilting a quilt, especially a home sewing machine, learning how do I quilt a big giant quilt on that tiny arm of a sewing machine.
Right. And some of these tips we're going to share today can be adapted for people who sew on long arms or who have a sit-down machine that's created by a long arm company, or their home sewing machine. Many of them are quite adaptable, but there are some special challenges that go with doing that on a home sewing machine. Now, before we launch into that, I do have to say I am trying to eliminate the unfinished quilt top from my vernacular, and I like to call that pile the summer weight quilts that haven't yet been made into winter weight quilts. So no one should feel bad about their summer weight quilt pile, but we'll help you finish how to get through those. So really the first place you need to start is by auditioning quilting designs. And I think all too often we finish the quilt top and we sit down and think, okay, fire up, I'll sit down at the quilt and I'll start quilting. And we haven't given any thought to auditioning quilting designs. So if you're a beginner, templates might be the easiest way to go. And the number one thing that I think can help your design overall at this point is choosing a design that fits the block well. If you have that design that's sort of floating in the middle and a lot of empty space around it, it doesn't look quite right to your eye when you see it. And sometimes it's hard to articulate what the problem is, but often it's a design that's too small for the block. So auditioning designs and looking at things that fill the block well is a very important concept, I think.
And you can audition it by using different kinds of either plastics that you can put over top, besides buying stencils, but you could just draw things onto even press and seal.
Absolutely.
And lay it over top.
Absolutely. You can use papers. There are lots of different...
Even a photocopy of your quilt, you can really draw on that and audition some color.
Ooh, that's a good point.
Right. Acetate overlays are sort of that clear that you can use a dry erase marker on and hold that over your block. So there are lots of things. But you really need to be thinking about quilting the whole time that you start this process. So what are you going to do to accent the design that you've pieced together?
And it's a big difference between quilting a piece quilt and quilting an applique quilt, too. There's, you know, different techniques that you would use.
Absolutely.
There are. I do think that when you're quilting an applique quilt, you've kind of got some of those benchmarks or things already built in for you, so it's going to be a lot of just free motion around your applique or on top of your applique, but you've kind of got something already in mind. If you do use stencils, or if it's not all completely freehand, the next step is marking your quilting designs on your quilt top. I am one of those people that sometimes layers the entire quilt sandwich together and then forget, I haven't marked anything on my quilt top.
Yeah.
And so you really want to mark your quilt top before you've layered it with anything. And choose a mark.
And that's because the markers might go through, right?
Well, they can go through. They can also, that's not a fun process, drawing on something
on
with
lumpy
batting. I mean, even if it's the lowest loft batting, that's not fun at all. And you really can't trace through a template
to
do that.
Oh, right, exactly. You can't see it,
So I think one of the best tips is just whatever marking tool you're going to use, make something that you can actually see. There are so many things out there that tools on the market that disappear. Why do you have to I guess I mentioned my nearsightedness before, so I need something that I can see. So I'm going to choose something that makes distinct lines, but that I'm also confident that it's going to wash out
and
later.
And I think also you have to think about using a combination of tools. Often one tool isn't going to do the job for you. If you like to make scrappy quilts like Elizabeth does, you might have a lot of contrast between lights and dark fabrics, and you might have to use two things, one that you can see really easily on the light fabrics and a different tool that you can see more easily on the dark fabrics. And one tip that Maybeth Oxenrider, who's got a lot of advice for us regarding machine quilting and who we use on our website at allpeoplequilt.com to showcase some of these things. One thing she says is to really pay attention when you've got a really busy print to the kinds of tools you're using. Because, you know, if you have a busy print, it can go from light to dark in the same thing. And you want to pick something that you don't lose sight of those lines you've spent the time marking as you're quilting along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, papers might be good in that sense. You know, some of the papers that you either spray based onto the top or pin onto the top.
Exactly.
So the drawing is actually on the paper.
And you can stitch through. And actually, one of the things I like the best, I don't seem to have a lot of yellow in my in my quilts. I just am averse to it. So the yellow pencil.
We need to talk.
The yellow pencil works really great for me.
Good for you.
So after you're done marking whatever you're going to mark, the next step is really to, now we're going to prepare the back. And it is best if you tape that to your work surface. So while you're, especially if you're quilting on a home machine, you're always, you know, working on the top of it while you're quilting. So you want the back and the batting to be nice and secure so that you don't ever have to worry about little pleats or tucks while you're quilting the top. You just want to have it done. So one of the things that I think people don't do enough of, they don't tape that backing enough. I think if you tape every 4 to 6 inches, and I think that some people think, well, sure, I'm taping that much, but if you really measure it, no, you're not. First, you kind of want, you want to tape the corners down, tape the seams, any seams down, you know, because most of us have a seam in the backing. Tape along one side, then the opposite side, and then finally those remaining sides. And I actually do stretch that backing just a little bit. I don't ever want to stretch it out of shape, but you just give it a little tug so it's about half inch bigger for every width of fabric, like every 40 inches or so. So, but make sure that your corners aren't pointing, you know, that they're tugged out of shape and they come to a point. If that does happen, just retape.
Yeah, so to taking the time to get the backing right is important.
Right,
for the whole,
it's the unfun
process.
Part of quilting, but you should do it. And then I think the next thing is you center the batting on the backing. And this is where if you're like me and you're sort of height challenged and you have a big quilt and you've centered it on this table, that you need to really pay attention to smoothing that batting out. And one of the best tips I have seen Maybeth use is taking her acrylic ruler, so like that 6x24 ruler that we all have, and using that to sweep across the batting and smooth out the wrinkles and the bubbles and really make sure that you've got it nice and relaxed. And if you have the opportunity to let that rest overnight so that any of the wrinkles or folds that were in the packaging that you had, I think that can really help as well.
I also do, I put my batting in the dryer with just a wet washcloth and just fluff it for a little while, and those wrinkles are usually gone. So after you've done that, now you're ready to baste. Another part that I don't think is very fun, but it is so important.
I actually like basting.
You do.
I like basting. I do. I'm weird. I love it.
And, of course, you have to put the top of the quilt on before you start basting.
Oh, oops.
Oh, yeah.
We left that out. But you do that, same principle.
Yeah, so smooth your, you know, top of the quilt on your quilt or on the batting. And then most people, if they're machine quilting, use safety pins to base their quilts. And this is another thing I don't think people do enough of. You need to pin a lot. And Maybeth's tip of figuring out if you've pinned enough is put your, you know, make a fist and put your fist down on the quilt top. And if you are touching pins all around, then sure, you've done enough. If you haven't, you got to do more. So, and the reason for doing all of this pinning every 3 to 4 inches, is that if you have pinned your quilt top properly, then you can start anywhere you want. You don't you don't have to start in the middle of the quilt because it's all secure. You can start from the edge and work your way across. And another thing, while you're doing this pinning, make sure you think about the first seams that you're going to be sewing, and don't pin in that area, because that's no fun. That if you have to keep stopping and take out the pin, put it back, you know, that's just no fun at all.
So you've got things pinned, your layers are all nice and smooth together, you've got your quilting design on there. Next up is a decision that I think, again, a lot of us sort of rush through and don't think about, and that's choosing your thread purposefully. And sometimes we just grab the color we're looking for, but we don't really think about the weight of the thread. And remember, the smaller the number on threads, the thicker the thread is going to be. You know, we think Maybeth's work is always spectacular. She does all her quilting on a home sewing machine, and she uses actually a 60 weight thread because she feels like it doesn't overpower the patchwork. She really wants her patchwork to be the star. And then the color, obviously, is an important choice. Do you want high contrast so that you really see all your quilting, or do you want it to meld into the background so that it's not really the star? And for some of us, that's a function of, or I should say not for some of us, for me, sometimes as I'm learning a new technique or a new shape, maybe I don't want my thread to be the star right out of the gate because I'm not sure my skill level matches. So that's something. But you use a sharp needle in your machine, a 70-10 for a 60-weight thread, or if you're using something like a 30-weight thread where you really want it to show, then maybe an 80-12 needle.
So we've just figured out all the things to get our quilting started. So we're going to take a little break here at American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. When we come back, we're going to talk about getting the quilt into the machine and the quilt stitches and all that other good stuff. So we'll be right back.
To find a quilt shop near you that carries the latest issues of Quilt Sampler and Quilts and More magazines, go to allpeoplequilt.com and click on Find a Shop.
Welcome back to the Spring 2012 Moda Fabrics Fashion Show. And what a show it is. Strutting down the runway with a fizzle and pop is Pezzi Print by American Jane. Now it's Kate Spain showcasing waterfalls of color and good fortune. Chloe's Closet is here with a peachy keen idea, combining two classic favorites, flannel and 30s prints. Next, let's take a walk in the woods with Anila Hoy and discover enchanting storybook characters. Stay tuned for more runway reporting and visit your local quilt shop to see these fashionable lines and more from Moda Fabrics.
At Stash Books, we work to inspire you to use fabric to create a beautiful handmade lifestyle. We're passionate about inspirational designs, accurate instructions, and finding authors that you want to know and learn from. Visit StashBooks.com for a behind-the-scenes look at this season's new releases, including Modern Minimal by Elisa Haight Carlton, Modern Patchwork by Elizabeth Hartman, and much more. Sign up for our email list at StashBooks.com and get 20% off your next order.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Editors share their tips, ideas, and techniques by visiting allpeoplequilt.com and clicking on Watch Videos.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, with the editors Jennifer Keltner and Elizabeth Beasy, and we've been talking about fabric, picking colors for fabric, and now machine quilting, and we've got about halfway through the machine quilting, and we want to share the rest of the tips and things that go on here at American Patchwork and Quilting. So, you know, the next thing we have to do is get that quilt ready to stick in the machine.
Yeah, now we get to do the fun part. We actually get to...
Yeah.
We're almost there. We're almost ready to stitch. So first you have to tackle, actually getting the quilt underneath the needle where you want it. I know that many people do roll up the edges of their quilts and secure them with like a bicycle clip, and that's totally fine if that works for you. Maybeth, our great quilter friend, that never works for her. So she really encourages you to just feed as much of that quilt under the arm of the sewing machine as you can, because really all you have to be concerned with is the area of the quilt that is between your hands. So when you're actually quilting, you'll be making what you call a hand hoop. So your hands are just on either side of the needle with your thumbs toward you and your fingers spread out. And it's kind of a mind shift, but you just have to realize that that's all you are having to worry about. So then you don't need to, this is what she says about rolling your quilt. She says most people roll their quilt and they spend all their time re-rolling it. Quit fussing with it. So if you really need to see this in action, we have a great video of Maybeth quilting, and it shows you that. You can go to our website, and this will take you straight there if you type in allpeoplequilt.com/620. And we have a video of Maybeth demonstrating her quilting.
And I think the thing you need to watch for as you're getting that big quilt, especially if you're working on a large size quilt, is that you have your workspace set up so it supports the weight of the quilt. And I always say it's like Captain Kirk in the Starship Enterprise. You need to, you know, figure out what's behind your machine that can support the weight of the quilt. If you've got a lot of the quilt off to one side, you know, set up your ironing board if you don't have another little table or something. But what you really want to do is prevent your quilt from dragging under the needle while you're stitching on it. So that's very important.
And this might be the ideal thing, really, is to have your machine level with the surface of your work surface. So this might be where you want to treat yourself and get one of those cabinets where it can sit in down into it, because that can also make a huge difference.
It does. It really does. And weight is, that's even more important, because, you know, drag is your enemy. As soon as it starts to drag, then you can't push it around and move it, no matter how small it is.
It is. So my favorite thing, when I was able to sit with Maybeth while she was doing this quilting and watch her in action, because I aspire to have her sort of quilting skills, is, and I don't know why I never really thought of this before, but when she does her quilting, she machine stitches all the straight lines first. So if there's anywhere in her quilt top that she is going to have a straight line, she sort of stabilizes the quilt by stitching in the ditch with a walking foot on any long straight lines between blocks, inside borders. And as you're doing that, then you can take out those pins. Your quilt is stabilized. And this is where we were talking earlier. If you have your quilt well pinned together and basted, you can start anywhere. You don't have to start in the center of the quilt. And that was always sort of my challenge. I was wrestling, it's like wrestling an alligator to get it in there, and then I'd get tucks. And if you just start stitch all your straight line, it's like building a house. You have to lay the foundation first, and that's what those straight lines are. So know where you're going to stitch in the ditch. The needle should pierce the quilt just next to that seam, but not in the seam line. And that's another mistake I think beginners especially make. And you just don't – you want to have control of what's underneath your hands. So when you have to stop – this is the other thing I forget a lot when I'm machine quilting, is that I'm in control of the speed pedal. Like I'll get quilting and I'll go 100 miles an hour, and then I start thinking, oh, no, I don't know where I'm going to go next. And I have to remember I could just take my foot off the gas, stop with the needle down in the fabric so it doesn't shift, and just control what's in my hand hoop, so to speak, and only worry about that.
I have one real quick little tip for people doing really large quilts, because sometimes, you know, your batting will stick out from under your quilt top. And if you've got a large piece and you're rolling around with a roller chair, occasionally you might actually rip a piece of the batting out, even if you've pinned the edges really well. I go along and we'll do a like a long basting stitch on the machine or a wide zigzag around the entire outside of the quilt before I start, so I never pull that batting out.
It's a great idea.
And so once you've gotten all of the straight line quilting done, mm-hmm. now it's on to what you either consider the fun part or the scary part,
mm-hmm.
depending yeah. on who you are. So now it's time.
It is fun.
Now it's time to stitch with a free motion foot. So whether you are following some designs you've marked earlier, or you are just doing stippling, or you're doing whatever that's not a straight line, now it's time mm-hmm. for that free motion foot or a darning foot, and you need to drop the feed dogs in your machine, and then you can just move the fabric freely all around underneath the foot. Again, using that hoop that we've been talking about, using your hand hoop, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is one place I think that people worry a lot about. If we've marked those lines, you know, if for a certain design, if you've marked some template
right.
lines, you don't have to worry if you're not staying completely on those lines.
Mm-hmm.
If you've done what we kind of recommend and pick something that's going to wash out and that's not permanent, no one will ever see those lines.
Right.
You will be the only one who knows, you know, that it mm-hmm. wasn't perfect and it wasn't on there. If you start,
and if you wash the quilt afterwards, it gives nice texture, and then you never see that little slight.
Exactly, you don't
adjustment.
See that little boo boo kind of thing. If you mm-hmm. know when you're getting started, I really would sew slowly, and your goal is that you sew at an even speed. You don't always have to have the tiniest stitches, but if they're even stitches, that mm-hmm. is a lot better. So.
We always say in the office there's no competitive sewing, so we don't give awards for speed or anything like that. Take your time. Enjoy the process.
I also recommend people practice like on a panel because you haven't put any work to making the top.
Absolutely.
And it gives you something to quilt around. So you know, if you want to warm up or if you're just learning, panels are a great way to start out.
Exactly. And I actually, some of the first quilts that I ever quilted on my machine were just like that. I don't mark a lot of designs. I just do a lot of free mm-hmm. motion. So I purposely choose fabrics that have giant motifs in them. So I can just work on, you know, roaming around and trying to follow those lines if I want to. But again, mm-hmm. there's no real design line marked, so no one can tell if I meant to do that or not.
Right.
I think one of the things that you can also think about is when you're choosing the foot for your machine, a lot of machines have multiple options in terms of what you're going to use for a free motion machine. I prefer one mm-hmm. that's clear so I can see the needle and kind of see everything that's going on around it.
Mm-hmm.
It really is a matter of personal preference. So if you go to your machine dealer, you can try out some different foot types and find the one that works best and feels most comfortable to you.
Because there are those great open toe types, sorry,
right,
that you can see almost the entire area of where you're stitching.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you stitch with gloves on, Pat, when you're doing your machine quilting? Or?
No, I don't, because I learned to do this so long ago that there really wasn't a tool like that, and so I'm really used to quilting. Sometimes in the winter, though, I have used gloves. Because my hands are drier, and I don't have to put lotion on all the time or get lotion on as well. So the gloves work for so many people. It feels like you have more control when you have the gloves on. They have little grippers on the tips, and then you just feel like you can hold on to it better.
Right.
Exactly. I have that feeling, and I have several pairs of gloves, and I had to keep buying them until I found the one that worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
And my second yep. favorite pair is actually a pair of garden gloves. So,
and I have yep. absolutely no ability to use gloves. I have to feel the fabric. I mean, to me, it's like mm-hmm. I might as well have on, you know, Playtex living gloves. No matter what I put on, it's like I'm quilting an out-of-body experience. Now, I will say for people who think, you know what, I'm never going to be able to do free motion quilting. This just isn't. You know, I'm not a designer or I can't draw. I tell people I can barely draw stick people, so it's a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's one thing that kind of helped me understand the process a little better. If you're sewing on a home sewing machine and you're doing free motion quilting, the needle is like the pencil and your quilt is like the paper. And you're essentially moving the paper around underneath the pencil to get your design. And that's not the way most of us draw. Generally, we move the pencil. So if you're challenged, as I am, to draw, I find it easier to quilt on a long arm because I get to move the pencil instead of the paper. And again, it's something for quilters to experiment with. I always tell people you shouldn't give up if you don't find the one way that works for you. You just keep trying different methods and different ways and different types of quilting so that you can complete your projects.
Yeah, a lot of people do find it way more comfortable to move the machine. And that's so wonderful. There are options like that out now that they're not really that much more expensive than a high-end domestic machine.
One of the tips that Maybeth shared with us that she uses, and she's like me, she doesn't do the glove thing, is using that moistener that you get at office supply stores. She uses one called Sort Quick, and it's for people who do a lot of filing so that you keep your hands sort of dry. It doesn't give you any kind of oil that you have to worry about having something on your hand. And again, you know, she refers to it as sort of having the death grip on that area in between your hands so that everything's smooth and you don't get any pleats in the fabric. But if you're like me and you can't wear the gloves because you got issues, then, you know, consider something like that if you find that your hands, you don't get a good grip on that fabric, because having a good grip is really important. The other thing I think that's kind of hard to think about when you first sit down is that concept with free motion quilting that you can move in any direction. And what I see a lot happen in classes where people are learning it is they're trying to turn the quilt once they have it under the arm and they're trying to get it to go in a direction. It's like, oh, yeah. I don't have to stop with the needle down and pivot. I could just move it, you know, 180 degrees or 360, whichever direction I want.
There is a learning curve, you know, figuring out what works and what doesn't. And I would just encourage everyone to just start with something. If you're not comfortable even starting with a throw size quilt, start with a wall size quilt and just do, you know, play or do one design over that entire quilt, and by the time you're done with that, you will feel very comfortable with at least that one design. So just keep doing that, and it'll be perfect.
I was going to say, you don't want to leave too much time in between your practice either, because then it's like starting over again.
Exactly, and you kind of have to start over again. If you want more inspiration on choosing designs and just figuring out how you're going to quilt the quilt, we also have a video with Maybeth on our site, and she shares the thought process behind some of the quilting on some of her quilts. And you can get there by going to allpeoplequilt.com/621.
Jennifer and Elizabeth, this has been so much fun to get together and really chat about the things that the readers want to know about.
It has been. Thanks, Pat.
Thanks.
Wow. So we'll probably do this again. We'll have another editor's tips and tricks down the road. But for today, we're done. And we're so glad you were here. Go out and visit our website, allpeoplequilt.com. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Come back next week for a brand new show.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.